Welcome to Explorations in Music, a production of KALW in cooperation with San Francisco Performances, the Alexander String Quartet, and Dr. Robert Greenberg. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This season, a triangle for the ages. Today, a young Johannes Brahms finally meets Robert and Clara Schumann, and life for all of them will never be the same.
Here is one who comes as if sent from God. It is really moving to behold him at the piano, his fine hands, which easily overcome the greatest difficulties.
Dr. Robert Greenberg holds a PhD in music composition from the University of California at Berkeley, and since 1989 has been San Francisco Performance's music historian in residence. He has performed, taught, and lectured extensively in North America and Europe. The Alexander String Quartet is among the world's premier ensembles, maintaining a busy international touring and teaching schedule and recording for their own label, Foghorn Classics. In the mid-1850s, a talented but not yet known Johannes Brahms would embark on a whirlwind concert tour through Germany that would place him at the door of the most influential composer and critic of the time, one Robert Schumann. Now, here's Dr. Robert Greenberg.
Gentle people, some music. The dark and edgy opening of Johannes Brahms's String Quartet in C minor, Opus 51, number 1 of 1873. Although that music was published in 1873, its dark and anxious mood reflects perfectly the mental state of one Johannes Brahms 20 years before, on September 30th, 1853. It was around noon, and the 20-year-old Brahms was standing outside the front door of Robert and Clara Schumann's house at 15 Bilkerstrasse in the Rhineland city of Düsseldorf. A bit over 5 feet tall, blonde, slim, with a face as smooth as a baby's bum. Yes, that famous beard would not come in for another 15 years. Brahms looked like a child, and not the already formidable musician, composer, pianist that he already was. His hands were undoubtedly clammy. Johannes, or Hannes, as his friends and family called him, mustered up the nerve and knocked on Schumann's door. Gentle people, the opening of the second movement scherzo of Robert Schumann's String Quartet in A minor, Opus 41, number 1 of 1842. Thank you. 5 months prior to Brahms's knock on Schumann's door had been, well, eventful. On April 19th, 1853, the not quite 20-year-old Brahms had left his hometown of Hamburg on a concert tour of Germany with a Hungarian expat violinist 5 years Brahms's senior named Eduard Hoffmann. As a self-styled Hungarian patriot at that time of great Hungarian nationalism, he had renamed himself Remenyi, and it was as Eduard Remenyi that Brahms knew him. Now, despite the fact that Remenyi went on to an international career as a solo violinist, he is only remembered today because of his brief association with Brahms. Nevertheless, I would share with you one golden Remenyi factoid, although it certainly was not golden for Remenyi himself. He dropped dead in the middle of a performance right here in San Francisco on the stage of the Orpheum Theater on May 15th, 1898, at the age of 70. Talk about going out with your boots on. Back to the concert tour. In May of 1853, 6 weeks into the tour, Brahms and Remenyi stopped over in the city of Hanover, there to visit Remenyi's Vienna Conservatory classmate, the violinist Josef Joachim. Now, Joachim was the real deal. Though he was not quite 22 years old, he already had an international career. Joachim was pleasantly surprised by the visit from Remenyi, who had brought along his little blonde accompanist. Brahms, is it? You're a composer? Oh, how nice. Why don't you play something you've written? Brahms played. Joachim's jaw dropped. 50 years later, Joachim recalled, quote, "Never, never in the course of my artist's life had I been more completely overwhelmed," unquote. It was, for Joachim, a revelation. This little towhead appears from Nowheresville, playing music the likes of which he'd never heard before. Within 2 days, Brahms and Joachim had forged a bromance that would last for the rest of their lives. Before they left Hanover, Joachim presented Brahms and Remenyi with a gift: a letter of introduction to the self-appointed king of the new Euro music, Franz Liszt, who was living and working in the German city of Weimar. Privately, Joachim took Brahms aside and told him that should things not work out with Remenyi, he, Brahms, should come back and hang with Joachim. Well, guess what? Things didn't work out in Weimar with either Liszt or Remenyi. Brahms, as it turns out, had zero tolerance for the whole Liszt-Weimar scene, the obsequious, backbiting acolytes, Liszt's faux regal manner, and the whole music of the future trip that Brahms would later call a swindle. Brahms's surliness got the best of him, and Remenyi was mortified one way or the other. He was not going to let his accompanist ruin his career. So on June 29, 1853, 2 months and 10 days after they left Hamburg, Remenyi dropped Brahms like a hot pierogi and went on his way. Brahms was mortified and broke. But Josef Joachim was as good as his word. Brahms returned to Joachim, and for 2 months, they concertized together and put together some much-needed cash into Brahms's pocket. As they parted on August 26, 1853, Joachim suggested that Brahms should look up his good pal, Robert Schumann, in Dusseldorf. But Brahms, oh, poor Brahms, Brahms was still upset about something that had happened 3 years earlier, in March of 1850, when Robert and Clara Schumann had come to Hamburg to perform. The not quite 17-year-old Brahms had screwed up all his courage and bundled together some of his compositions and sent them to Schumann at his hotel. But for whatever reason, Schumann did not examine the music, and the package was returned unopened. According to Brahms's biographer, Carl Geringer, quote, "The bitterly disappointed youth retired still further into himself," unquote. So when Joachim insisted that Brahms visit Robert Schumann, Hannes, dude, get over it. Knock on his door. Brahms was adamant. Some bitch didn't even open the package. Brahms walked his way to the Rhineland, where he met and charmed ever more members of the musical community. Everywhere, he was offered the same advice. You must meet Robert Schumann. And each time, Brahms responded with the increasingly tired story, some bitch didn't even open the package. Finally, while staying with a family named Dyckman in Bonn, Brahms played through part of their extensive collection of Robert Schumann's piano music. Well, that did it. Brahms was entranced by music he'd never really had the opportunity to examine before. Okay, I'll visit Robert Schumann. So, sometime around noon on September 30th, 1853, 5 months and 11 days after having left Hamburg, Brahms stood in the doorway of Schumann's house there in Dusseldorf. My goodness, it had been an incredible 5 months. Hamburg, Rumänia, Joachim, Liszt, Joachim again, Bonn, and now Dusseldorf. Every step, a necessary precursor to the next. Luck, serendipity, perhaps even fate, if you believe in that sort of thing, had brought him to that very door. The people he would meet in that house and the events that would take place there over the next few months would shape the rest of his life. Brahms knocked on the door. Gentlemen, the opening of the fourth movement of Robert Schumann's String Quartet in A minor of 1842. September 30th, 1853, 12 noon, Dusseldorf, number 15 Bilkerstrasse, the Schumann house. Brahms, in front, knocks on the door. It was answered by the eldest of the six Schumann children, Marie, 12 years old. Mama and Papa are out. No, I'm not sure when they'll be home. Come back tomorrow morning. What's your name again? Okay, I'll tell them you came by. Ciao! I mean, talk about anticlimactic. Oh, my goodness. What Brahms did not know is that Joseph Joachim had visited the Schumanns about a month earlier, singing his, Brahms's, praises to the sky. So when Brahms did indeed go back to the house the next morning on October 1st, he was expected, although you wouldn't have known that from the figure that greeted him at the door. Robert Schumann, as the literature describes, in a dressing gown, I think we would call that just a bathrobe, and slippers, ushered him into the house. Schumann was 43 years old and, unbeknownst to Brahms, was suffering from both mental illness and tertiary syphilis. Brahms introduced himself, Schumann mumbled something, and immediately led Brahms to the piano. Brahms sat down and began to play his sonata number 1 in C major. Brahms' biographer, Jan Swafford, describes what happened next. Quote, Brahms felt Schumann's touch on his shoulder. Please, wait a moment. I must call my wife. Schumann rushed from the room as Brahms sat staring at the keyboard, his heart pounding. He may never have heard Clara Schumann play the piano, but he knew all about her. Clara had performed only sporadically since her marriage in 1840, but her teenage years were still spoken of with awe. Clara greeted him with a smile. Here, dear Clara, Schumann said, you shall hear music as you have never heard before. Now begin your sonata again, young man, unquote. Brahms played the sonata and then waited for a response. Eventually, Schumann quietly asked him if he had any other music to play. So Brahms played his F-sharp minor sonata, the E-flat minor scherzo, a number of other works that no longer exist. And he kept playing. He kept playing for over 2 hours. The recital finally over, Robert and Clara still said nothing. Finally, Robert got up, patted Brahms on the shoulder, and said, you and I understand each other. Brahms hadn't a clue what Schumann was talking about. He was invited to lunch the following day and was ushered out of the house. Now, poor Hannes, he thought he had bombed completely. Of course, the opposite was true. He had rendered the Schumanns speechless. That evening, Clara wrote this in her diary. Here is one who comes as if sent from God. He played us sonatas and scherzos of his own, all of them rich in fantasy, depth and feeling and mastery of form. Robert could see no reason to suggest any changes whatsoever. It is really moving to behold him at the piano, his interesting young face transfigured by the music, his fine hands, which easily overcome the greatest difficulties, because his things are very difficult, and above all, his marvelous music, unquote. Robert's diary entry that night was rather more abbreviated. Visit from Brahms, a genius. The next day, Brahms, anxious and clueless, failed to show up for lunch. So Clara left the house and prowled the streets of Dusseldorf until she found him and literally dragged him back to her house. It was at that point that it began to dawn on Brahms that the great, if unappreciated, Robert Schumann and the great and legendary Clara Schumann actually wanted to be his friends. Brahms wrote to Joachim a couple of days later. What shall I write you about Schumann? Shall I break into praise of his genius and his character? Or shall I lament that people still sin grievously in misjudging and so little honoring a good man and divine artist? And I myself, how long did I sin likewise? Let's talk a little about Robert Schumann in preparation for his first string quartet. He was born in the picturesque central German town of Zwickau in Saxony on June 8, 1810. He was the fifth and last child of August and Johanna Christina Schumann. August Schumann was an author, that is Robert's father, who wrote the sort of chivalry-laden medieval romances that were so popular in the 19th century, German language harlequin romances, to be honest. Ultimately, he made a small fortune publishing both his books and German language pocket editions of Sir Walter Scott's novels and other classics by such authors as Goethe, Schiller, Cervantes, and Lord Byron. Schumann later spoke of his father's book dealership as, quote, a great formative power for a youth, unquote. An avid reader, with a tremendous variety of books at his disposal, Schumann began writing poetry at the age of 10. Concurrent with the development of the literary Schumann was the development of the musical Schumann. At the age of 7, he began his piano lessons, and his progress was rapid to the degree that by the age of 8, he was already writing his first compositions. In this case, it was a set of dances for the piano. According to Schumann's friend, Emil Fleschig, quote, Schumann was absolutely convinced as a teenager that he would eventually become a famous man, unquote. All that remained, of course, was in what profession he would distinguish himself, music or literature. In an autobiographical sketch, Schumann later wrote, "Already in my earliest years, I always felt compelled to produce, if not music, then poetry, and I enjoyed a happiness just as great as any I've ever felt." In the end, it was Schumann's desire to unify these two art forms, music and poetry, that led to his mature compositional style. Schumann's String Quartet in A minor, Opus 41, number 1. Schumann's String Quartet number 1, his first string quartet, was composed in 1842 during what we can only call an ejaculatory spasm of creative work. Movement 1, sonata form. Just as a reminder, sonata form is a ubiquitous structure in 18th and 19th century music. Almost every first movement of almost every instrumental work is so structured. A sonata form movement is one in which typically two themes are introduced in a section called the exposition. They are developed in a section cleverly called the development. They are recapitulated in a section cleverly called the recapitulation, and then the movement comes to an end. Sonata form is presumably about the contrast, development, and reconciliation of two or more different characters, meaning main themes. So as we would expect as an audience of Schumann's, Movement 1 is indeed structured in sonata form. Now, in preparation for composing this, his first string quartet, Schumann spent a few very intense months studying the string quartets of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. But even more, he studied the music of Johann Sebastian Bach, and it is Bach's influence that is immediately apparent in the introduction of the first movement, an introduction that Schumann tacked on after having completed the movement. Here is that sinuous, contrapuntal, meaning many simultaneous voices of equal importance, sinuous, contrapuntal, Bach-inspired introduction, or more appropriately, here is the movement opening prelude. From there, a very brief transition leads to the beginning of the sonata form proper, to the beginning of theme one. And with that beginning, something of a surprise. You see, this quartet is advertised as being in the key of A minor. The introduction, the prelude, does indeed end in A minor. But the sonata form itself, which comprises the great bulk of the movement, is cast in the key of F major, an infinitely brighter, more engaging sounding key. This is as if you've gone to see a film advertised as an R-rated horror action thriller starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the first half hour of the movie actually takes place in Downton Abbey. Here is the lyric, and for Schumann, rather understated, first theme in F major. For me, the big interest in this first movement lies in those highly contrapuntal or polyphonic passages that Schumann composed in response to his study of Bach. For example, the modulating bridge, the transition between themes 1 and 2, is constructed as something called a fugato, that is, as if it were the opening of a Baroque construct called a fugue. Here is that transition. Let's hear that fugato as it occurs in that parallel passage, the recapitulation. Likewise, the central development section features some thrilling Bach-inspired polyphonic writing. It's something we can look forward to. Movement 2 is a scherzo. A scherzo is a typically three-part movement in which the first and third sections, we could call them A sections, are the scherzo sections, and the middle contrasting section, the B section, is called the trio. Now, we heard the opening of the galloping scherzo at the beginning of our session. Once more, here's a brief look back. And by the way, while we listen to this, let's be aware that we're finally in the key of A minor. That's the movie we paid to see. Now, again, as we would expect from any movement called a scherzo, this one is cast in three parts, A, B, A. Rather than call his contrasting B section a trio, though, Schumann calls his an intermezzo. Well, a trio is as a trio does, and this passage does what it's supposed to do, and that is contrast with the outer scherzo sections. Schumann's intermezzo is characterized by a series of long descending sighs. Movement 3, Adagio. This gorgeous movement is generally referred to as a love ballad. If that is so, and who are we to argue with those who make up such things, then the object of its affection must be Robert's adored Clara. Let's hear the brief recitative-like introduction and the first statement of the love theme as sung by the first violin, which spans an expressive range from the spiritual to the ecstatic. Thank you. And finally, movement four. While this extended bit of hoedown music is cast in sonata form with an exposition, development, and a recapitulation, it features but one principal theme, a theme that keeps coming back, a high-energy bop fest characterized by an announcement, short, short, long, followed by a string of country fiddling eighth notes. Here's the theme as it first appears. The lengthy development section is a tour de force of just how much musical mileage Schumann can get out of the following version of theme one. Yeah, that's going to take up about 3 minutes worth of music, and you're never going to notice how much time goes by. The interplay of that idea is going to be so wonderful. We'll hear the actual development section in performance. It's full steam ahead right now to the recapitulation, and then, suddenly, everything goes into slow motion over a bagpipe-like drone. And from there, everything goes into super slow motion. As for what happens after that, well, we're just going to have to wait and hear. The Alexander String Quartet performs Robert Schumann's String Quartet in A minor, Opus 41, number 1 of 1842. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Explorations in Music on KALW. Today's program featured Robert Schumann's Quartet in A Minor, Opus 41, No. 1. Tune in next time when we hear Brahms' Quartet No. 1 in C Minor, Opus 51. Explorations in Music is produced for KALW by Eric Wayne in association with San Francisco Performances, the Alexander String Quartet, and Dr. Robert Greenberg. For more information about San Francisco Performances and their upcoming events, visit them on the web at sfperformances.org. The Alexander String Quartet are violinists Zacharias Grafilo and Frederick Lifsitz, violist Paul Yarbrough, and cellist Sandy Wilson. You can find out more and purchase recordings of the ASQ on their website, asq4.com. The lecturer was Dr. Robert Greenberg, music historian in residence at San Francisco Performances. The concerts were recorded at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. You can join us on Facebook by searching for Explorations in Music. Our email address is explorations@kalw.org. Thanks for listening. I'm David LaTulipe.